show. My name is Jonathan McNeese. This is my co-host, Mr. Chase Boatwright.
Woo! I feel good.
We got a little bit of the pre-show jacked up, living on caffeine life going, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Either delirious or too hopped up. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, it's definitely, you get excited for the show. Plus, you got the, like, and you're probably doing the same thing as me. We talked about, you know, how it's always hard to plan and get everything done and still be getting stuff out the door. But then I also had that was compounded by the fact that I was never happy with, like, if I set my goal to take, you know, 30 knives, yep, and then I got, see that I was going to probably finish 30 knives. Well, now my goal just became 40. Like, yep. I could never stop. Like, it was always, whatever I did, it was going to push to the last minute, no matter what. Cause if I hit the goal, I just moved the goalposts.
Yeah.
So
that's definitely
good. More's got to be better.
Yeah, definitely something that happens. And I mean, I think this show is only one where I've kind of limited myself and I'm like, well, if I get other stuff done, then I can just try to make progress for stuff after the show, or, you know, try to get other stuff sold between now and then.
Yeah. The biggest one is will fill right around the corner by the time we're done with this one. So
yeah, that's the other thing is Atlanta's looming large already. Mm-hmm. So, and
that's right.
It's very scary. So yeah, we got less than a week, yep, for Blade Show Texas at the time of recording. So,
yep, that's right. What? It'll be this coming Thursday, or we'll be leaving this coming Thursday. I'm sorry, you're leaving on Thursday as well.
Yeah. Just driving over.
Yep. Driving. I don't mind the drive. It is the longest drive we do for a show currently, but it's not a bad drive. It's, you know, one way we go, especially depending on, so we board our animals, board our dogs when we go, and to leave from there, it tries to take us through Memphis, which I don't like going because I don't like going through Memphis, period. But then it takes you through a couple of bigger cities versus, I can't even remember where all it takes us through. But whereas if we go the other way straight from the house, the quickest route is like, it's all pretty much just straight and like mostly like it's not you don't go through hardly any big cities, you know, at least not straight, you know, through the middle of them or anything.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of nothing. Now there's a couple of spots there where you better hope you hit the last bathroom break, because if not, which for me isn't that big of a deal. The side of the road's fine, but the women,
the wives don't care for that.
That's right. They're not quite that hard for.
But it's easy for them. Yeah, I think that's our planned route too, is just drop down to Birmingham and then go west. It looked like we're just going to be going west for, you know, I don't know how many hours, but I think it was 10 and a half hours overall. So
I think I think it's 9 to 10 for us, depending on which way we go or whatever. So right in there, but it's not, it's mostly straight. Like I said, not a ton of, you know, anytime we have to go up and go through Atlanta to get somewhere, that's a nightmare. Cause you always hit traffic in Atlanta, but going that way, we did last year, we did hit some road work going there.
Mm.
Actually a good bit of road work. I think it delayed us by a couple of hours actually. So hopefully that won't happen again this year. I'm thinking we may backtrack a little bit and go the route that is straight from the house. That's less of that kind of stuff. So anyway.
So yeah, we're all excited for that. And you know, I'm actually making decent progress. I'm about halfway done with the knives that I've got to get done. And the other two are basically just lacking marking and sharpening and, you know, so all the fixed blades are done, just getting them fully done. And I'm going to take pictures today once they're sort of, you know, once the light's better outside, basically.
Right.
But so today, guys, we're just kind of talking a little bit, shooting the bull as it were, and you know, no real heavy hitting topic per se, just kind of, sorry we missed last week, had technical issues on my end, my computer just decided it did not want to podcast that day no matter what I wanted to do, so it I had to update all sorts of stuff. Sorry we missed last week, but wanted to get you one before Texas and all that, so give you something to listen to on the way out there.
That's right. And like I said, just kind of keep it lighthearted and talk a little bit about the show and hit just one or two things, maybe a couple of questions, and try to keep it kind of short. Like I said, I know you've got stuff getting ready for the show. I'm not as much getting ready for the show as I am getting ready for the Dixon. So I've got somebody who may reveal later or whatever, but a buddy that's a expert in some of the machining stuff that we need to do on the Dixon that, anyway, more will be revealed later, but yeah. We got a key element to doing what I want to do on these is coming up, and I've got to have all my ducks in a row. Basically, I need the entire thing, a good working knife before he gets here to help me with some of the other stuff that we've got planned. So
yeah.
I know that's a little mysterious right now, but you guys will see. It actually won't just affect the Dixon. It'll affect all of our knives.
Yeah.
We've got planned on doing. So that's where I've got to make sure I've got all the tooling, all the everything I need, and get the, I realized I was pretty happy because I had the, you know, I showed you guys the working Dixon last week, but our last episode, but I realized that I knew I had to prototype the clips out, but I decided I was getting ready to run more Dixon handles. And I thought, you know what? I probably don't need to keep running handles because they do have a pocket yep. for the clip. And I was like, just in case I end up needing to make some changes that I can't tweak with just the clip and I need to change that pocket, then I better go ahead and get a clip made so that I don't end up running a bunch of handles that won't work with the clips. So anyway,
yeah.
So that's my plan this weekend is to get, I've got it pretty much programmed up. I've just basically got to get out there and make a pallet and try making a clip and see how it goes. So,
are you doing like a milled clip for those?
Yeah, it's going to be a hybrid milled clip.
Okay. Gotcha.
So it's going to be, it'll have basically the 3D mill base, but then it will also be bent. It's not going to be,
gotcha.
Cause I do not, I think I, as anybody that's listening was on the live that I did the other day, I talked about this and my view on clips is that they should do their job holding the knife in the pocket and all that good stuff. But when you go to use the knife like a knife, then I want the clip to essentially disappear. Like I don't want it to, you know, when it's in your hand, I don't want it to feel hot spots and all that as you're actually holding the knife and using it, you know? So, yeah. And most of the 3D milled clips that I've seen are, yeah, similar to that.
Yeah, sort of. Very similar to that. Milled from a, you know, thicker piece of titanium
Right. So it has a solid 3D base, but then the actual clip part is thin, like a normal, thin and bent like a normal clip. And to me, that kind of gives you the best of both worlds. You've got the look and the, you know, the little more refined look of a 3D clip, but you've got the function and the function of the spring itself, because a real 3D clip doesn't spring the same as a fully milled 3D clip that's not a hybrid like we're talking about. The spring doesn't feel the same. They work, but they're not, I mean, in my opinion, a spring clip is superior as far as actual function.
I agree.
And then, like I said, avoiding hot spots and stuff too, the clip not being too high.
Yeah.
You know, and
most
clips out there are whatever thickness the material is made out of, the base is that full thickness all the way down, you know.
Yeah.
It adds that much thickness to the knife, and I'm just not a fan of that. Now, don't get me wrong, they can look cool, and I made a bunch like that back in the custom days just because it was kind of like a, you know, some artistic expression there or whatever, to, you know, but from a functionality standpoint, I don't like them, so.
I agree, and the main reason I do the hybrid clips is they're basically just easier for me to make in my process. It's easier to mill a thicker piece of titanium and do a couple bends versus dealing with a really thin piece of titanium. That's very difficult to work with and profile and do all that stuff when you're doing it manually. And so, basically, I agree.
I did used to enjoy kind of taking a piece of, you know, there was a couple of different ways I did them, but some of those fully 3D clips, just basically taking the piece with the holes in it and the counterbores and then taking it to the grinder on a small wheel and just literally shaping it by hand from there. That was fun, like as far as from the creative standpoint.
Yeah.
To do it that way. Not a lot of fun with the burnt fingers and stuff, but
yeah.
That's a small piece of titanium that heats up really quick.
Really quick, yes. I've been doing a good bit of the burning fingers here the past few days, but you know,
doing that little dance.
It's part of it.
Yeah. That's right. So you mentioned we started off talking about the road trip or whatever. You mentioned something about some road trip stuff. Did you have something in mind, some secrets of the road or something to share?
No, not at all. I mean, you know, I barely go anywhere. I barely drive, but no, I was just going, you know, kind of see what you liked in terms of, you know, road trips. Do you prefer music or podcast or audiobooks or, you know, like how do y'all do it? And I was going to, you know, give my answer too. So.
I got you. Yeah, some of all of it, honestly. It just depends. You know, for whatever reason, when we're driving, my brain like automatically kicks into businessman mode. So like we have a lot of discussions about, you know, stuff around the business, you know, strategies and stuff that we want to do, ideas. It just, a lot of times it just becomes a big brainstorming session. So yeah, that's not going to last for the entirety of 10 hours. So there's music. And then sometimes depending on what she's in the mood for, if, you know, if one of us has heard a good podcast that we want to share, one that we've been, you know, wanting to listen to, we'll share one or whatever. But, and we have even done audio books before. It's just kind of usually it's a mix of listening to music, her listening to me, you know, sound like a dying coyote trying to sing along, and then would turn it down when one of us comes up with an idea to brainstorm something about or whatever. So
yeah, that's pretty consistent. I mean, not necessarily constructive conversation always, but you know, there's a lot of conversation. When conversation dies down, it's music, and you know, especially with the little one in the car, it's usually Disney music or something to keep her entertained, or we're just singing to keep her entertained. But the only real time I listen to podcasts is when I'm alone in the car, or if I'm driving, generally my wife is asleep. Like as soon as she hits the passenger seat, it doesn't matter what time of day or what really is happening. Like she hits the passenger seat and she goes to sleep. So I'll just pop in one earbud and listen to a podcast while, you know, till we get where we're going. But
we're almost exactly the opposite. Like really? She barely can. Yeah. She can ever something on a long trip. She'll maybe doze off a little bit, but she doesn't sleep hardly at all in the car.
And that's the way I am. I can't hardly sleep.
Baby. Like you put me in the car, she's driving, like I'm out. Like I struggle to, I feel bad because it's kind of unfair. A lot of times she's awake and I try to encourage her to go to sleep, but she can't really sleep. So
yeah, that's the way I am. I just don't sleep in the car. So unless it's, you know, if it's some sort of 16-hour, you know, we've been awake, you know, very, very long time, I could sleep anywhere. Sure, but for the most part, I can't take naps or do any of that, like small sleep during the day, or I'll screw myself up. And, you know, it's just hard for me to go to sleep. So,
Oh, it just does it to me, especially if that sun starts shining in through the windshield and I ease that sleep back a little bit and I'm gone. I don't necessarily feel good afterwards. I mean, sometimes it helps. Sometimes one of those where I wake up, I feel worse, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
So, what about snacks? Got any favorite road trip snacks? Any gotta haves?
I mean, favorite road trip snack would probably be like the trolley sour gummy worms. Those are that's my drug. If those were, you know, illegal, I would be a criminal 100%. Just, you know, they get me and they still do to this day. This has always been one of my favorites. And just but as far as an actual like snack, I mean, I don't know. Most of the stuff I like is too messy to get to eat in the car. Like, you know, I love those little like peanut butter crackers and stuff, but as soon as you open those, you've got crumbs everywhere and, you know, like any sort of chips and stuff, I get all over the car. So I don't do a whole lot of snacking, but
That's a factor.
What about you? You got some good snacks?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it kind of depends. If I'm, you know, most of the time I try to eat reasonably healthy. So watch my girlish figure and all that stuff. So, which kind of looking like a fat girl right now, but that's all right. See, you haven't been watching it as closely, or they still hadn't gotten over the holiday season. Yeah. But so a lot of times, I mean, if we're going anywhere that we pass a Buc-ee's, which we will be on this trip, but we'll be all the way into Texas before we hit a Buc-ee's. So it'll be the tail end of the trip. We like to get some of the little, they got little meat and cheese tray things that in Buc-ee's that you can get, like the little packets of meat and cheese and stuff like that. Those are good if some, you know, peanuts, you know, honey roasted peanuts, whatever, stuff like that. I like all that stuff too. Now, for being bad, now one trip, where was it? I don't think it was the last time we did Texas, but it was somewhere we went late last year on one of the shows. I was in just one of those moods I didn't care what I ate. You know, I was just like, screw it, I'm eating anything I want to. Which is always bad because when I eat anything I want to, I eat a lot of whatever I want to. Same. And so we got on a M&M's kick, but it's the like peanut. We stopped. I mean, I like hunted down a Dollar General somewhere to stop and find them. Like, I'm talking about like the big like 1-pound bags or whatever. Yeah. And like and got like one of the, I think it was the peanut and one of the peanut butter. And so it was a, you know, back and forth between those.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those. And I think polished off both. She ate some, I ate the majority of both bags. So yeah, I think I probably ate close to a pound and a half of M&Ms. So that's
nice.
Obviously not recommended. But
yeah.
Anyway. So yeah, but nothing. We don't have any just super traditional, you know, like we got to have it every trip kind of thing. It just
yeah, I don't think we really do either. We just kind of, you know, whatever we're feeling that day, you know. And also, you know, if we just see a restaurant or see something, we're like, oh, let's get that.
Oh yeah,
you know, it's a lot of
We definitely have.
Yeah, scatterbrainedness as far as when we road trip. It's never super structured. We just kind of.
There are certain restaurants that are like, not every time, but we like Slotsky's Deli, and there's, we live in the middle of nowhere. There's nowhere, not one around here. And a lot of times we'll pass, if we pass somewhere, she'll be looking it up sometimes to see if we're passing within, you know, 5 miles of one, we'll detour a little bit or something.
Yeah.
But yeah, just because it's one of those things that we don't have the opportunity to get very often. So
yeah,
but anyway. But how about you guys drop in the comments and let us know what, since we'll have time to check these out before our trip, let us know some recommended, what your favorite snacks are and stuff, and see if you got any good ideas that we might be missing out on. So I'd love to hear your suggestions. I'm sure there's a wide variety of stuff out there. So
yeah, that'd be very much appreciated. You know, I'll have a lot of time.
If anybody's got something really good or really weird, I'd be curious to know.
Yeah. So, one thing I was going to touch on, not necessarily like a full, you know, thing about it, but the Crucible situation kind of has some more news to it now that we've got past the February 4th, I think was the date where like the auction was official. And so Aristeel ended up being the high bidder and purchased the trademarks and patents and stuff like that. However, this week we found out that apparently they had no interest or did not purchase the actual facility in New York. So there's another company looking to buy that facility that makes like fasteners and stuff. So it's not even going to be like steel mill anymore. Yeah. So that situation still kind of weirds me out. Not sure what Aristeel's doing with those formulas yet. I don't know if they're working with Niagara or anybody like that to make and roll the steel, or I don't know, but it's, you know, they now own, from what I understand, like the CPM trademark and all the patents therein of those formulas. Right. So,
yeah, so we still wait and see mode is what we're going to be able to, what's going to be out there to get or not. So,
yeah,
we'll see what happens. So still could end up buying CPM steels that are just made by, you know, somebody with a different name, basically, you know, different owner, or could be something completely different. Like we said, that's more than likely they'll have some that are same recipe, different name kind of deal. So we'll see what happens.
We'll
have something to work with either way.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't think knife steel is going anywhere for sure, but you know,
no, definitely not. Yeah. And if it does create a void for a little bit, then somebody will step in and, you know, Niagara or somebody will work something out and step in to fill that void with something. So
yeah,
I'm confident we'll be good for a while. So
yeah,
we'll just ride that out and see how it goes.
Yep.
You never know. We might end up with a steel that everybody likes even better than Magna Cut or whatever your favorite steel is, you know, something else, something could evolve from this that's even better. So
yep,
you never know.
Yep. And, you know, fresh set of eyes looking at, you know, old things could be, you know, good for it. But just wanted to kind of update y'all on that since we talked about it a good bit at, you know, sort of the beginning of the podcast and then kind of had a lull of information for a bit. I keep, you know, I had been still searching for it after that February 4th, but I never could find more information. Yeah. So I was kind of, you know, just waiting on it.
Right.
But, yeah.
So still kind of wait and see. It's officially sold, but we still don't know what's going to happen as far as our steel goes. So,
yeah.
So I think we talked about maybe touching on just a quick little review. We've talked about it already on another podcast, but a quick little rundown with the show coming up for those of you that are coming, or just maybe those of you that are planning on going to a show at any point this year, just kind of going over just a quick little from our perspective of Blade Show etiquette. So, you know, there's some certain, you know, kind of pretty well accepted do's and don'ts. So, and I'm not actually sure. I thought of at least one that I don't know that we covered in the past that I definitely want to mention. So you want to kick us off with some of your top couple of things that you can think of?
Well, the only one I can think of right off the top of my head is the one you talked about before, and I don't want to steal it from you. So go ahead with that and I'll be thinking.
Oh, I'm not sure if we're talking about the same one. So
no.
You go ahead. That's not the one. The one I mentioned off air is not the one I was just talking about.
Okay. Well, then I'll hit that. Cash is king. Yeah. Cash is king at Blade Show or any show you go to. Yes, we can take, you know, other means. We can take cards. And, you know, for me, like, I don't have like a card reader machine or anything like that. And I'm not sure how y'all are doing it now, but like, you know, I can take PayPal and, you know, take a card through PayPal and stuff, but cash is definitely, definitely easier. So,
yeah. And it's so that almost everybody, like everybody said cash is king for years, you know, when I started doing shows, but over the last probably 5 years, and I know it's just the world we live in, people have just gotten used to not carrying cash, but like it's switched from us doing probably 90% cash sales at a show to probably doing 10% cash sales at a show now. Like it's, and besides the fact that obviously guys, like we, you know, cash is just better for us, leave it at that, all around. But also for one thing, because we it actually costs us money. It costs somebody money. All right. Different makers handle it different ways. I know us, at some point we may have to change, but we typically, I think we've done it maybe at one show where we actually added a charge for the credit card fees, but you know, we bring the knives and sell them at table price, you know, just our normal retail price. And anybody, when somebody stands there and whips out a card, it costs us 3 to 4% off the price of a knife. And when you're selling knives in the $500 to $600, $650 range, that adds up really quick, guys. If you, you totaled up, like you guys would probably be shocked. And if it was coming out of your bank account, you would probably be sick if you saw how much money comes out of fees just from what we sell to show how much money we pay the credit card companies and fees. And, you know, it's not like everybody couldn't bring cash if they wanted to. You know, people are just choosing not to for convenience and stuff. And I get it that it's, you know, there's safety concerns and stuff like that. People don't want to be walking around with big wads of cash. But, guys, people did it for years, like I said, up until like maybe the last 5-6 years. I mean, good Lord, there was probably millions of dollars of cash in people's pockets walking around in Blade Show. Like, I mean, it's, I mean, it had to be hundreds of thousands at the very least. I'm sure probably in the millions. So, and I don't ever remember of anybody hearing anybody getting mugged or, you know, pickpocketed or whatever, anything like that. It may happen, but anyway. So the other factor is, when you pay with a card, like, so what we do, we tried an actual reader before. I think it ended up tearing up or whatever. It just didn't work that great. So we have it on my phone where we can like punch it in the card number manually, but it makes it a giant pain in the butt, guys. Like, and again, I'm happy for people to spend their money with us, period. Yes. But we got to take time. And when our table's real busy, a lot of times we'll be sitting there and have people lined up waiting to check out. And we got the phone trying to run cards. And then the problem we've run into the last couple of years is that the banks have such good fraud protection on there. Probably over half the time when we run somebody's cards, because when you do a manual entry like that and it's not a swipe, it causes more red flags on the bank's end. Mm-hmm. And so probably at least half the time, if not more, people will run somebody's card. It'll get declined. Within a minute or two, they'll get a text saying, you know, a fraud alert text saying, hey, well, did you make this transaction or whatever? Mm-hmm. So they have to stand there and wait while we cancel that transaction or whatever. And then everybody always gets kind of embarrassed, like, well, my card, I know I got money in my account. We're like, we know it's not, that you ain't got money. It's just a fraud thing. And then we can redo the thing, punch the numbers back in, and it'll go through. It's just, and if we go with a card reader, that does help some, but even with that, we still get some bounce back on fraud alert stuff. It's just, and you're at the mercy of the Wi-Fi in the building, which 9 times out of 10 sucks.
Yeah.
Like, even if you hook up, like we paid for the Wi-Fi, and I think actually the last time we paid for the Wi-Fi, we paid for it and it sucked so bad that we basically had to just turn it off and just use what we could get on our phone. Like, it's like just a cellular connection. So like there's not great options. There's so many people in there, so much stuff sucking from the network that like, it makes it a pain. So it's easier for everybody all the way around. the maker gets to keep more money in their pocket instead of spending, you know, there's, you know, nobody at the show benefits from money wise from the card being used. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not paying less because you're using a card. And in some cases, people are charging you more. Yeah. And the maker is either charging you more or he's making less just for the convenience of using a card. So, just, you know, and on you guys' end, and I probably shouldn't say this because, you know, my job is to try to make money, but my job is to make you guys happy, to be totally honest with you, without sounding too corny, because that's what makes us money. And when you're out there with a card and you're spending money, it is way easier to go over whatever you set your budget out to be when you go to a show. Yep. All right. So if you take whatever cash you can afford to spend, that's your budget. And when you're out of cash, you're done. Then, you know,
when there's no more green paper, you're done.
That's right. It makes it easier to be disciplined. And I've had people where they ran out of cash and they're going to the ATM or they're putting something on their card or whatever. And I get it. You know, you get there, it's tempting to go over your budget or whatever, but there's just a lot of reasons why cash is the best option at a show. So we're certainly not going to turn you away if you have a card by any means, but just for both of our sakes, the customers and ours, it's definitely better with cash. Like you said, cash is king. So,
yep. Sorry, go ahead.
No, that was that. I guess that covers that part of the etiquette part. So,
yep.
The other couple of little things is just, guys, be courteous. If you're at a table looking, especially if you're just standing and kind of, I love it. I spend probably 80% of my time at shows just shooting the breeze with people, you know, talking to people. But if you're standing at a maker's table and you're kind of like standing right in the middle of the table and you're not actively looking to buy something and you're just talking to them, be aware of your surroundings. And if other people are coming up to the table and looking to maybe look and purchase stuff or whatever, just, you know, maybe step a little bit to the side. You don't have to leave. You don't have to even stop your conversation.
Yeah.
You know, also don't be offended because I always have a problem with it. I don't know. I feel like I'm offending somebody either way. I'm in a conversation with somebody. Somebody else walks up and they obviously are wanting to ask a question about a knife or something. Like, I don't want to cut off the person I'm talking to, but then, and people are always super nice about it. You know, when whoever I'm talking to is always, nobody's ever gotten, you know, pissed about it that I know of, but just sometimes we're torn a little bit with trying to deal with so much at one time. So help us out a little bit. Don't block up people's tables. And I think you mentioned on the last time we talked about this, don't be standing there talking to your buddy right in front of somebody's table that they paid, you know, several hundred dollars, if not more, not counting all the work they put into it. You know, that's their, that's their retail space. Don't be clogging that up with, just standing there talking to your buddy right in front of the table or whatever. Just be aware.
Yeah. You
know? And then how do you feel as far as, people, go ahead. This is probably what you're fixing to ask. Go ahead and see if it was the same thing.
I was going to say, I re-listened to the one we did it on last time, and I kind of cut you off in the middle of you talking about, like, asking to pick up knives and stuff.
Exactly what I was about to talk about.
Yep. Okay.
And I don't mind at all for people to come up to our table and pick knives up without asking. I'm not that formal.
Yeah.
But we also aren't selling, you know, $3,800, you know, custom, whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like our knives, for what we're selling, I expect them to be handled. I expect them to be used. So, you know, now if I had a, you know, or even more, I mean, there's knives at that show that are in the, you know, tens of thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And if you're just walking around, you know, randomly picking stuff up and, you know, with your Dorito hands that you've just been in your bag of Doritos with right before you walked up to the table, like, you know, a good idea to ask permission. It's never a bad idea to ask permission.
Yes.
Again, I don't care. Like, I actually, you know, encourage people, and, you know, I'd rather them just pick them up than me have to tell them, hey, pick them up. You know, it's fine. But it's not everybody feels that way. And not everybody is selling the same kind of stuff that I'm selling. And I get that. So, you know, that's always better safe than sorry. So,
yes. Yeah. That was basically going to be my point is, you know, asking is never a bad idea. You know, most of the time people aren't going to have a problem with it, but asking, just being aware that maker knows that you are picking that up and it is in your hand. Cause, you know, that's another part, unfortunately, of our job at the shows is trying to keep an eye on everything and make sure nothing grows legs and gets stolen.
It's happened to us at least one show last year, if not two.
Yeah. And especially like at y'all's booth, I know it's even harder cause, you know, you've got a lot more knives and a lot more space to cover and a lot more, you know, real estate to keep an eye on. So like
right.
But it's just, you know,
it gets hectic. You got people, you know, sometimes two rows deep standing there and people reaching up, reaching in between each other to grab knives and look at them. And like, it's, and again, you're trying to talk to people, give them your attention. And like, it's difficult. So
yeah,
I think we're going to probably incorporate some cameras going forward, because at least be able to go back and review stuff or whatever. So
yeah, not a bad idea. I mean, it's unfortunate, but you know, it's always been part of this thing. You know, there's no security tags on it that's going to beep at the door. So
right. Yep. And on that note, I've never really thought about this, but I mean, you guys, when you're standing around at tables and stuff, be aware of that. You know, if you see somebody acting shady, I mean, don't just go ahead and stab them preemptively, but you know, maybe kind of help the makers or whatever out, you know, just kind of keep an eye on things. I know there was some folks caught, I think last year at the show, and they were, I don't remember if they were caught or just everybody kind of knew after the fact who was pretty sure who the group was or whatever, but just, you know, everybody be aware of that.
Yeah. I've seen that situation happen. I was at a bigger booth and, you know, somebody down at the end was like, kind of, they had a knife and they were looking at it and they were kind of like walking off a little bit. Like they weren't actually trying to steal it, but they were walking like a couple steps away to go show it to some friends that were grouped up there. Right. But like one of the guys that wasn't even working the booth was like, "Hey, you gonna pay for that?" And like, you know, it was a whole thing and they were like, "No, yes, yeah. I'm just, you know," that whole thing ensued. Right. But right. I mean, it is appreciated, you know, for the community to kind of govern it as well.
Yep, for sure. So, that doesn't do anything but hurt everybody when that kind of stuff happens. So, so the other big thing that I wanted to mention is, and I'm going to explain this for those of you that don't understand what it is, and this is more for makers, and I'm talking about makers of anything. I don't care if you make gadgets, you know, to go on the knives or, you know, whatever, like if you make patches, if you make, you know, accessories, thumb studs, clips, lanyard beads, whatever, or knives, do not go to a show and brown bag. It's not only is it highly unethical, it's against the rules and it will get you kicked out. And what I mean by that is, if you do not have a table or a booth, if you do not pay to sell things at that show, do not sell anything at that show. All right. Now, the exception to that would be if you're a collector, and there are dealers and stuff at the shows that buy knives, right? Mm-hmm. There's dealers set up at tables and they trade stuff like that.
Yeah.
You're a collector, you have a knife that you're wanting to sell to a dealer or whatever. I mean, that's part of what the show is for. All right. That's what that dealer is paid his money to do, is to be able to try to buy knives from collectors and stuff. So
yes,
along with selling. But do not take whatever item that you have that's, you know, something you make or something you resell or whatever, do not take it to the show. And I have known like multiple people like, "Yeah, I'll be walking around the show. Come hit me up. I'll have this and this and this with me. Come hit me up." Guys, that is complete and total crap. Like, those of us that do it the right way, we spend a whole lot of money and a whole lot of effort to exhibit at these shows. Mm-hmm. And then you have people come swoop in with their backpack full of knives that did nothing but make the knives. And they're basically, you know, the whole reason the show is there is because, number one, you guys buying tickets to come. But the only reason you guys are buying tickets to come is because all the makers have paid to be there and exhibit their knives. Yep. So the makers that are paying to exhibit their knives are the ones that are responsible for the show being there. So do not be one of these jerks that walks around and takes advantage of that and brown bags. All right. It's been a problem for as long as there's been shows, and I don't see it a lot, but I do. Nearly every year I see somebody, and a lot of times it's a newer maker or something like that. And they're like, you know, "Oh yeah, I'm going to have, you know, three of this new model at the show or whatever." And I see people walking around with lanyards hanging out, you know, 10 gazillion lanyards hanging off their backpack because they're basically walking around like they're at a damn flea market or something, trying to hawk stuff. Like, guys, it's not okay. Like, if you did not pay for a space to exhibit and sell your stuff, do not sell your stuff. All right, period. That's all there is to it. Now, the little bit of gray area that I can see is in that we talked about the pit at Blade Show Atlanta. And that's not technically part of the show. I still don't think it's right for an act for a maker to just full on take stuff and try to go to the pit and sell it.
Yeah.
There is a lot of buying and selling and trading that goes on between collectors at the pit, which again, I feel like is totally fine. That's, mm-hmm. that's part of the reason to be there. Mm-hmm. But if your whole goal of as a maker is to go and set up and basically set up
a table in the pit
at the pit and try to sell your stuff, then you're wrong. Like that's not okay. Your ticket that you paid for to be there is to be an attendee and, you know, either look and or buy, like not to sell. All right. So that is not right. And I can tell you this, most of the people that you see doing that, like I said, are newer people and stuff, people that are looking to climb the ladder. And I can guarantee you that the people that are more established that see you doing that, I would not ever ask them for a favor if they see you doing that, because you ain't going to get a favor. Yep. Ain't nobody going to share any information with you or anything like that, because you're essentially taking away from their livelihood to some extent by doing that. So that's a sure way to get essentially blackballed by people that are more established in the industry. So do not do it. It's wrong, period. So if you want to, sell your stuff, pay for a table.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do.
I will say not, you know, selling, but if you are a new maker, bring some of your work to the show.
Absolutely.
And show it to people, show it to customers, show it to makers, show it to people, you know, get feedback. Yep. That's a good thing.
Yep. Absolutely.
But you're not there to sell. You're there to get feedback. Right. Those are different things. Right. You know, until you put down the money to, you know, actually exhibit at the show, you are not supposed to be there taking money for the things you've made.
Right. Yeah. And I did that. I mean, I took knives around at, I remember that I went to one blade show as an attendee. Mm-hmm. And then I had a couple of knives with me. I remember showing them to, I don't know. I remember, I think Tom Crine and Les George and, who else? Kendricks.
Is this the one with Barker? The same Barker?
That wasn't the same one where I went up back to the handling people's knives, which I had permission to hold the knife, but I apparently got completely bumfuzzled or whatever and dropped his freaking highly hand rubbed, like fancy. Thank God it didn't hurt it, but try not to drop people's stuff, guys.
Accidents happen.
I'm guilty, unfortunately, but
no one's gonna like
damage the knife. I would have bought the knife. Like, thankfully it didn't do anything to it, you know, and we've had ours dropped multiple times. We've had people, especially with our autos, we've had people open them over the table full of knives and sling out of their hand and fall on other knives and ding them up to the point that we couldn't sell them at the show. We had to take them back and refinish them. And we've had people drop them on the floor and everything else. And again, like, accidents happen. It's happened to me. But at least, you know, take ownership of what happened. And if it did any damage, you should at the very least offer to pay for the knife. Like, that's just fake.
Sorry, I wasn't trying to bring up painful memories, but
every time I see him, I still think about that. I'm like, I dropped one of his knives at a show. But again, I was very lucky it didn't hurt. Actually, I was like I dropped it and I was trying to catch it and I was like fumbling it around. It was the point that I was about to cut a finger off or something. And I like just kind of had to let it go. God, it was all carpeted floors and stuff. And it hit the floor. We picked it up, looked at it good, and it was fine. I was like,
oof.
But I know he was thinking, this freaking idiot. Like, come on, man. He's a good guy, though. So maybe he wasn't as hard on it as I was on myself. But that was, that sucked.
Yeah. I mean, I've had people drop them before. And, like, you know, I don't know. My first instinct was, like, to make sure the person was okay. More than anything, I even experienced that at Spyderco. One of the first years we went to Blade Show, I didn't do it, but my wife did it. She was trying to open a knife and gave it a little wrist action and ended up throwing the knife and opening it at the same time at the Spyderco people into the booth. They all hit the floor. Eric hit the floor and a couple of other people that were working there. And first thing, they popped up from behind there and said, "Are y'all okay?" And so I was like, these are good people. I like.
As they have a knife now, their shoulder, like,
no, I don't know where the knife went. They didn't give it back to her, obviously. So,
I don't blame them.
Yeah,
that was funny.
There was something else. What was I about to on Blade Show? Yeah, I don't know. Okay,
well, carry on. That actually made me think of something else when you said that, guys. Yep. And not to you know, I'm sure obviously that turned into a weird situation. But when you said that about wrist flicking it open, guys, if you buy a knife and you want, like, wrist flicking a knife open, to, in my opinion, is abuse. All right. You should not be, number one, I know with our knives, they're made to where you do not have to wrist flick them. Like, they open great without that. And every year, inevitably, we have people come up to the booth and they'll be whack. And, like, if you stand there and repeatedly, like, wrist flick a knife open, or even one time, like, guys, that, I mean, these are still, titanium is not indestructible. People have a very big misconception about how strong titanium is. It's strong in a lot of ways, but you can dent it relatively easy.
Oh, yeah.
It's not that tough of material when it comes to, like, impact and stuff. So, like, and even, like, steel, too. I mean, steel is hard, but, like, it's, there's things that you can damage and cause excessive wear really quick if you're overly, you know, wrist flicking a knife. Like, it's just, if you can't open it without wrist flicking it, I mean, if you have any question or whatever and you think that's the way it's meant to be open, then ask the person, you know, but ask the maker. But, like, don't just walk up and be snapping knives open, you know. Don't be like that meme guy on,
you know, can I snap
social
it?
Media. Can I snap it?
Yeah, no, just, you
all
know.
That good stuff. And if you want to put on a show, I'm fine with that, but don't, yeah. But don't be wrist snapping knives open. And I've had people that I know and that I like and that should know better stand there at my table and just repeatedly, as they're talking to me, just repeatedly wrist flicking it open. And I try to be, you know.
That's the hard one, too, when it's like a friend of yours and they're just sitting there and they're talking to you and they're not thinking about it. They're just like, you know, and you're like.
They're not just opening it. They're like flicking, you know, like slamming it open.
Every time.
When I try to be tactful and I'll be like, hey, that, you know, that thing, you can just open it with just your thumb. Let me show you. That thing don't even require any wrist action. You know, try to do a little educational moment or whatever. Not be like, hey, quit wrist flicking the knife. But as I'm getting older and more crotchety, I may get more to the, hey, quit wrist flicking my damn knife. Like, come on now. People want to buy a new knife, not a knife that's essentially used because somebody stood here and wrist flicked it 100 times.
Yeah, and I guess sort of last little bit as far as Blade Show Texas, or just any show in general, like for you guys on the other side of the aisle, I would recommend bringing some snacks and stay hydrated. And, you know,
snacks, good shoes.
Good shoes. Good shoes. Yes, not Crocs.
Don't go crazy. Don't be afraid to go take a break and sit down for a little bit. You end up getting more out of the show if you pace yourself a little bit. Than if you try to just stay going until you're so exhausted that you got to go to the room and then you're done. Like, exactly.
I've definitely been on that side. Like, first year at Blade Show, I went for just one day and tried to see an entire Blade Show Atlanta in one day. I walked past every table. I was diligent about that, but I didn't see everything. And then the next year, you know, we went 2 days and kind of paced ourselves and I actually made a map and made, you know, that's another thing, you know, they have the maps and stuff on bladeshows.com or bladeshow.com or bladetexas.com, I think is for Texas, but you can actually print out where everybody's going to be and highlight it and, you know, make yourself a, you know, a little map to it and actually like arrows.
Have a plan.
Yeah. Have a plan going to the places you want to go to.
I highly recommend that. There's tons of stuff there to see, guys, and you may discover stuff that you don't have any idea about before you get there. But if there are makers or knives or whatever, people that you absolutely are going to be disappointed if you leave the show without seeing, then put those at the top of your list. Go check those off your list first and then start going and doing the exploring, because it's very easy to get to the end of the show and be like, man, I wanted to see such and such and I didn't see it and this and this and this. And like, so the ones that are like can't miss for you that you got to see, make sure that you got it.
Hit them early.
You know where they are. Have a plan. Go see this one, this one, this one. Your plan may have to change a little bit. You may go by and they may be swamped and you may not even be able to get up to their booth and you may have to circle back around. But like, at least start off with some kind of a plan or else you'll end up missing somebody guaranteed and you'll be disappointed. And then once you've gotten the people out of the way, the ones that you for sure want to see, then you can go explore and find all the new stuff. That's that's what I would do. Anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
Because it's even as a, you know, just trying to, there's stuff that I want to see every show. And of course, it's a little different because we're working for the vast majority of the show. But like, there's stuff that I'm like, okay, I'm going to go talk to so and so, or I want to go meet so and so, or I want to go see so and so's product. And most of that stuff ends up undone at the end of the show. So,
yep. But, you know, like I said, it's different being, we're there for a different purpose. We don't have as much time to walk around and stuff.
When you're actually working. But anyway, so I think, did you say you had a couple of questions that we could hit real
quick? Yeah, we can hit a couple if you don't have anything else on Texas.
No, I think that's probably more than people bargain for on shows, but all of that's important, some more than other. Like I said, courtesy and not brown bagging, that kind of stuff for sure. The rest of it just kind of
helps. And no running.
Yeah, not a good idea to be running.
Yeah, just dumb. Don't do it.
For safety and I've never seen anybody's table get knocked over, but I've seen it close a couple of times. I've seen the table get bumped into pretty hard.
Yeah.
And again, guys, that's unless you can afford to buy however many knives are on that table, because that may be a few tens of thousands of dollars of knives on a table, and you being careless and whatever and run into it and scratch them all up because you knocked the table over, then.
Yeah. That would be bad.
Yeah.
But, all right. Let's hit a few questions before we get out of here. So, let's see. I got a bunch on here, so I'm going to cherry pick a few. We don't have time for a whole bunch.
No.
Longest you ever took to make a knife from at Pocket Priorities?
I have no idea.
That was sort of my initial thought. I mean, probably the first knife I ever made. I started it in April of 2019 and finished it December of 2019. So that probably is the one I've taken the longest.
Yeah.
But I really don't know, because sometimes, you know, I'll cut something out and, you know, lay it out and profile it and drill it and all that, and then I'll get busy doing something else and it'll hang over there on the wall for, you know, a year or so, or, you know, I don't know exactly how long it's been there, but then I'll finish it and either, you know, give it to somebody, or, you know, if it is, you know, something, usually the ones that I end up shelving like that are ones that have problems, they're warped, the grind's messed up or something, and, you know, I just kind of put it aside and I'm like, I'll fix that another day.
Yep, procrastinate on it.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't know if that would truly be, you know, you didn't work start to finish that whole time or whatever, so that's probably, I guess that's what the question's getting at, but
yeah.
I honestly don't know. I've actually, like, working on a knife and not setting it aside and coming back to it or whatever, I mean,
I hardly ever do that. But
a week to a week and a half, whatever. I don't remember ever having any. I've never taken on any projects where one knife just took up like a whole bunch of time. Like, you know what I mean? Like, weeks and weeks worth of work. I know some guys do, like, but I've never done that.
Like,
I can tell you on the flip side of that, I can probably tell you. Yeah, I don't know if I can tell you for sure the fastest I've ever made, but I did make one on a live stream one time.
Yeah.
So. Weren't you there? Didn't you? Were you there?
No, I wasn't there.
Oh, maybe it was Luke that was filming for me.
Yeah.
So we did like an Instagram live. Well, it wasn't a full on. So I had basically a piece of bar stock with a hole in it that I just, like, I didn't have a pattern or anything. I just took and put a hole. I don't think it was right dead in the center, but I put a hole in one end of it and then heat treated the bar stock.
Yep.
And then on the live, I took that preheat treated knife and profiled it out on the grinder. And then ground the bevels on it and all that. And I mean, it didn't have a sheath and all that. And it was just I don't think I even wrapped the handle or anything. It was just like a full tang, you know, metal handle or whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, and which was probably in the matter of an hour, I'd say. So
that's moving.
A heat treated blank with a hole in it to a knife with bevels. And I could be wrong. It may have been, you know, an hour and a half or whatever. I don't remember. That's been years ago.
I mean, Yeah, you've told me about that in the past. I wasn't there though.
I want to do that again, actually, sometime not too distant future. That would actually be a pretty cool thing to do on a regular basis, but maybe I'll do that brainstorming on the way to Texas with Amy and see what I can figure out.
All right.
What else you got?
Ideal EDC folder blade length from Bacon Swag.
I would have said few years ago, I would have said a 3-inch, and I still really like a 3-inch knife, but I've carried my 3.5 so much that I really like the 3.5-inch size. But I'm fixing to start carrying about 3.75 or so, I think is what I measured the Dixon at. somewhere in there. Anyway, it may end up changing my mind too, but I would say probably the 3.5. A 3 is plenty big enough to do pretty much anything that I need to do with a knife on a daily basis. But
yeah,
I don't know. I think I've just gotten used to the 3.5.
Yeah. I'm like right in the middle. You know, I think like 3.25 is about where, you know, like I've found that's sort of the perfect length for me, but you know, it's all subjective. There's some people that, you know, a 3-inch blade they think it's a toy, and others think, you know, anything over 3.5 is a sword. And like, so it's, you know, it's all a personal preference.
Hands and stuff too. I mean, you got some people who's, you know, whose bear paws make a 3.5-inch look tiny, and some people whose the 3-inch looks big in their hands. So it's just kind of, but my personal preference, I'd probably be right in that 3.5 range right in there.
But I do let's hit one last one. So Baconswag also said, why are there no custom mid-tech or high-end production backlocks? Where they at, yo?
Well, you got any thoughts on that?
I wouldn't say there's none. There's probably some out there that, you know, just obscurely and stuff, but mostly because people love to do the flippy nonsense. They like the drop shut. They like the action and stuff, and you can do it on a backlock. And, you know, backlocks are interesting in the fact that they are inherently ambidextrous, and they are, you know, very simple as far as like the locking mechanism, and they're very strong. I like backlocks a lot, but mostly, you know, I think it's demand that's probably where I would land on that.
They're just not as popular.
Right.
You got to keep, I mean, now somebody may, you know, there's something to be said for kind of, you know, being the one that kind of pushes, and you can't say start something because backlocks have been around for a long time, but you know, the kind of like the resurgence of slip joints and stuff, and the modern slip joints, like, you know, there was a few people, but that kind of pushed that in that direction early on, that, you know, kind of started doing that early on. And then, it's just the trends.
Yeah.
So it may very well come back around. I'd actually like to see it come back around. And I've honestly thought about doing it, but may. So we'll see. Definitely not super, super soon, but I think there could be it's just like anything else. And when, you know, when something gets popular, you've got the people that are going to get tired of whatever, like people, there's certain people that want what everybody else has got. And there's also people that simply do not want something, but just because everybody else has got it. There's some gray area in between, but and I think from what I've seen from Mr. Bacon Swag online, that's probably him, is the, if it's popular and everybody else has got it, he wants something else. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm that way to a certain extent myself. So that's, you know, I can see there being a market for those people, but the majority of the market, you know, is what it is because of what people ask for and what people buy and what they spend their money on. Yep. And at the end of the day, you know, I mean, yeah, there may be some guys out there that are doing this kind of, you know, hobby style or whatever that could start pumping some out. But like you were asking about mid-tech and production, and I just, you know, at the end of the day, we've got to pay the bills, and if people aren't buying backlocks, then we can't pay the bills. So it won't matter how cool they are and how many of them we make if they all sit on the shelf. So
yeah, and I think they also kind of have a stigma of being sort of not, well, for one, a lot of people consider them sort of old school, and two, you see them on a lot of cheaper or lower end of the price point knives because they are a simple mechanism to make, and so like they kind of have an association with them. But I mean, you can make a high end backlock and, you know, make a high end knife with it, and I'd probably be happy with it.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of the newer locks out there are, you know, basically updated versions of the backlock almost anyway. So
yeah, it's, like, you know, a lot of the stuff Demco does is basically all off of that, you know, sort of backlock design. And
I like the idea of doing it, to be honest with you. I feel like I saw somebody. Is some of those, or any of those Main Street knives, wherever that?
They were all backlock.
Okay. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
So there you go. There is Medford is doing some. So
yeah,
he may bring them back. I kind of like the idea, probably because, I mean, that was a big part of what I carried as a kid. I mean, it was, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, I carried some, you know, like slip joints or whatever, but, and fixed blades, of course, but like, yeah, I mean, a back lock was the deal, you know?
Yeah, that was so, most of what I carried too. I mean, was yeah. all back locks.
You're talking about them being strong, and not that the lock is not strong, but I was obviously as a kid, I was carrying little cheapo, crappy yep. ones. But I don't know how many of those locks I broke.
Yeah,
I think more. I had more of them that didn't work anymore than that did.
I mean, you know, that can happen too with a less than, you know, right. standard with any manufacturing. Locks, yeah. Well, yes, that too.
Crappy knife, any lock's not going to be great.
Yeah,
but I like the nostalgic side of that. That would be pretty cool to bring that back, since, you know, mm-hmm. that's probably what it needs to be, is one of us older guys like that, that, you know, where it's kind of a nostalgia and that's what we carried when we were kids or whatever, that want to bring those back. So, which might yep. be, I mean, me and Medford are about the same age, so that may be part of his thinking on that too. I like that yep. idea. So there you go.
Right. Yeah,
it might happen, you never know. That may be the Medfords may be the beginning of it.
Yeah, that could be cool.
Wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Is there anything else you wanted to hit before we let these fine people go?
I think we're just at right about the hour mark, looks like, and I got clips out here waiting to be made and all that good stuff, so I guess we better move it along.
Yep. So I will be at table 10K at Blade Show Texas for anybody that's coming. You will be at booth 309. Is that correct?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, you knew I was fixing to mess it up, didn't you? Because I messed it up on a post the other day.
Yeah, I may have sent a text. And did you ever fix that?
It wouldn't let me. The only way I could fix it was, actually, it wouldn't let me. So I boosted that post, and it wouldn't let me edit it or delete it because it was boosted. So I went in and put it in a comment and pinned the comment at the top. So, I mean, it's all right. Hopefully they'll find us. But, yeah, I put my – because we changed booth numbers for Blade Show this year, for Atlanta this year too. Mm. And I had just been dealing with some stuff about that, about the booth, and had that number on my mind and put the wrong number in. But yes, thank you. 309 at Texas is where we'll be. So and please come see us, and we really look forward to it.
And we've got the stickers. Be sure to pack those.
Yep.
So we'll have Night Freak Show stickers.
Yep. Got a nice big – wait, where's the camera?
There it is. It's hard to find this thing sometimes. But, come see us, have a big old knife party, buy some knives, come hang out, talk to us, you know, all that fun stuff that we're going to do.
Suggestions for the show would be great.
Yes, so, that too.
You guys are doing a good job of commenting and all that, and we appreciate it. Please keep that up.
Yes.
Give us a like, a follow, share it out. Let's see if we can get this thing big enough to be worth continuing to do.
Yeah, and for anybody, you know, not going to the show, or, you know, just anytime, if you've got any suggestions, comments, or questions, or whatever, our email is knifefreakshow@gmail.com. So you can always hit us up there.
That's right. All right. Well, we appreciate it, guys. We will be talking to you. I guess the next episode can kind of be like a Texas wrap-up kind of deal. So that'll give us something to talk about then. So we appreciate you guys. Those of you that are coming, we'll see you there.
Yeah. Don't forget to let your freak flag fly.